Hello, Mr. Healy. Welcome to Mindshower Digital Detox. You must be really looking forward to going offline for a while. We do ask that our clients leave all electronic devices in the box provided. Don't worry, we'll keep it safe.
Hey, what up, everybody? This is your host here at Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm watching this new music video for the 1975. And first of all, let me say, I love the 1975, but more importantly, they like to push boundaries on what's unique and different and artistic and creative in music video culture. And I love it. Music videos aren't quite what they used to be in the sense that they don't really relate to the song too much. This definitely doesn't relate to the song at all, other than the fact that he talks about tripping on drugs and acid and everything else. And that's exactly what this music video is for the birthday party from the 1975. It is a total acid trip. Basically, the premise is detoxing, essentially, on technology. And basically, he's telling you to just live in the moment. And there's a lot more to it. I'm cutting it short, but you can see how stupid some people are when they're so connected to the internet. And he walks through all of these kind of cliches and motifs and fads that are very present in our culture today. And it's just taking a step back. He's actually taking an out-of-body experience to reflect on that and to try and pull himself out of that virtual mindset that he's in or that everybody else is in. And, you know, so it's very cool. And I like the 1975 for their way that they relate to things like social media, drugs, addiction, relationships, the media, and entertainment. So what does that have to do with sketchbooks and the creative mind? Well, it has everything to do with the creative mind because that's what they are. They're artists. They're musical artists. And in this case, it's actually funny. It's none of it's real. It's all 3D. And there's probably some motion capture that was involved in this. In fact, quite a bit. The animation is subpar at best. It definitely reminds me of some Final Fantasy games from about 5, 6, 7 years ago. But it's not bad, and it gets the point across, so I like it. But we have a lot in store today for Sketchbook Audio's episode for this weekend, which should get you going for the rest of the week, and I hope that you will stay tuned and see what we have in store for you. Stay tuned. Okay, we are back here at Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for tuning in. I am live on Instagram at the Sketchbook _ Instagram account. So go ahead and tune into that because you can see me live. And actually, it'll really help you understand what I'm going to be talking about in the next couple seconds here. But yeah, so you can check that out. If you didn't know already, I also have a Twitter account that is Sketchbook Audio. Check that out over there on the Twitter. And you can also shoot me an email, ryan.sketchbook.audio@gmail.com. Feel free to ask me any questions on there. Feel free to give me some tips, some hints, some news, some ideas, something you're thinking about, something you want to draw, something you want to learn how to draw, topics you want me to discuss in future episodes. I will do it. Because you emailed me, and that's just how it goes here at Sketchbook Audio. Anyways, so about this shirt, I went to a gaming convention, my first gaming convention ever last night, and it was phenomenal. I've never been to one. I've been to a ton of comic cons, but I have never been to a gaming con. So this was the DreamHack 2020 gaming con up in Anaheim, California, which is close to LA. It's actually, it took place at the convention center in Anaheim, which is, in fact is right across from Disneyland. So it was very packed. There were a lot of people there and everybody was gaming. It was intense. Now, some of the games weren't games that I necessarily play myself. I'm more of a Call of Duty fan. If I'm playing something that's non-competitive like that, I'm playing Tomb Raider, something like, I don't have it now anymore because I don't have an Xbox, but Gears of War, I used to play Halo, things like, well, Halo is competitive, but I would play the campaign mode a lot. So I really like the immersive stories. Now, what else am I playing? I am playing God of War, the newer one, and Resident Evil 7, the remake for Resident Evil 2, or was it Resident Evil 1? I don't remember. A lot of games that I've been playing, and none of them were at this gaming convention, so but that's okay. Halo was, though. Warcraft, they had a Warcraft 3 area, arena, which it was actually quite popular. If you know anything about Warcraft, Warcraft 3 hasn't been new for many, many years. And it was quite intense. Hey, Sharon, what's up? How are you doing? Thanks for tuning in to Sketchbook Audio. I am talking about some gaming stuff. In fact, I'm talking about the gaming convention I went to yesterday. So basically, at this gaming convention, you sign up to play some games and win a bunch of money. You can play solo, you can play with friends, or you can play as a team or a league. And you can play against other teams, win money, win respect, and pretty much live out your life happily ever after because you're getting paid to play video games. It's awesome. I just went there to enjoy, to spectate, and to figure out what I'm going to do the next time I decide to go to one, which I'm really looking forward to because I totally missed out on the gaming aspect of things. However, like I said, some of the games there I don't really play, and I not a huge fan of, so like Fortnite was a big thing. But there was Counter-Strike, there was Halo, there was Warcraft 3, and a few other ones that I definitely love and I should have played, but, you know, whatever. They also did board games, which I thought was interesting. They did a huge Dungeons & Dragons thing, so it was really fun to watch. If you know anything about Dungeons & Dragons, you know that it's not, there's nothing really there. You do play with dice and you play with little figures on a board, but the whole thing is about creating a very immersive story and bouncing off of everybody that's on your team and playing against, you know, whatever the cards or whatever the story is telling and whatever you roll the dice for, yada, yada. It's fun. Actually, so shout out to my buddy, Dave Jennings, who is a big Dungeons and Dragons fan and also a Hearthstone fan. In fact, they were playing Hearthstone. There was a group of people that were playing Hearthstone, and you could watch it up on a big screen and enjoy, you know, how that game is played. Now, it's a card game. It takes Warcraft and puts it into a card game, much like Magic the Gathering. And then you just battle, you compete, you do things. Another really cool thing that was there that I wasn't expecting was basically startups. People from schools or people from their basement, they were just creating video games and showing them off. And I was really impressed. There was a lot of really good art, and the art direction of a lot of the games was phenomenal. Now, some of the games were simple in the sense that, you know, they were turn-based, a couple dungeon crawlers. So if you're familiar with some of the old Final Fantasy games or Zelda, the original Zelda, they were dungeon crawler games where you were looking typically down from a third-person point of view, and you would watch these characters go forward, forward, left, left, you know, stuff like that. And those were pretty interesting to watch. So I got a chance to watch some of that, and I really enjoyed the new creative ideas that are coming out for video games. My favorite thing, though, had to have been the pinball game, the virtual, well, I don't want to call it virtual pinball game. It was a digital pinball machine. Basically, they took all of these great video games or great stories like Aliens, Jurassic World, Jurassic Park, Ghostbusters, Family Guy, and American Dad, Bob's Burgers, and Archer, and they put them all into a giant pinball game. And the pinball machine could hold it came with 80 games, but it could hold way more than that. And you can continue to update it and upgrade as you go along. So you're never bored. And I managed to play a good 30 minutes of a version of Doom and Half-Life, as well as a Spider-Man one. And they were great. The graphics were top-notch. They were very fitting for the characters or the story. And most of them were actually, you know, ripped right out of whatever it may be. Like American Dad looked exactly like American Dad. There wasn't anything different. Simpsons, same thing. And all the way to Half-Life and Doom, they look like they were straight from a PlayStation 4 or Xbox version of the video game. So high quality. The frame rate was phenomenal because if you know pinball tends to, you know, you have to watch where this ball is going all over the place, and it never seemed to skip a beat. Now, it was hard to follow the ball at some points because while the game tries really hard to tilt a two-dimensional thing into making it three-dimensional, the ball could get lost, and it made it a little tricky to play. But if you've ever played pinball machines for real, then you'll know that that happens in those two. The only difference is you can lean over the pinball machine and tend to find the ball pretty quickly. However, what that does mean is the pinball machine can shoot your ball right back at you, and you're all the way up here and the ball's all the way down here. But needless to say, that was from Zen Studios. So I highly recommend, if you are a pinball fan, to go check them out and check out this tabletop that was at about $8,000. Cough, that's a little pricey, but it was worth it. Think about it. If you were to go and buy a regular original classic pinball machine, you might be able to pick one up for $1,000, maybe less. If you step it up and get something with a digital screen, whether it's an 8-bit screen, a 16-bit screen, or something that's a little bit more high def, you're going to spend close to $2,000-$4,000. And if it's a classic that it's hard to find, you're going to probably pay even more. But then there's the fact that if those components inside, which by the way, there are many moving components inside a pinball machine, if those were to break, you have to pay for those. You have to find them, or you have to make them or have them made. And not too many places stock spare pinball parts. Therein lies the big problem with buying a classic pinball machine. You're going to struggle to find parts. And when you do, they're probably going to be pretty expensive. Now, back in the day, they weren't, because everybody was just playing something like pinball machines. And then as video games progressed, people stopped playing pinball as much and went to the stand-up cabinets. You know, playing everything from Pac-Man all the way up to Time Crisis 5 and you know, whatever else that they have out there. And now, of course, there's also virtual reality, so that takes things to a whole new level, which, by the way, let me skip steps here for a second. There was a video game company at this video game con, DreamHack 2020, called Shell Games. Now, Shell Games, if you know anything about them, they do a lot of portable games. They do not too many things that go to the console, as far as I know, but they do a lot of downloadable games. A lot of things you can play on like your Nintendo Switch, your PlayStation Vita, and your smartphone, of course. Well, they took it a step further, and now they have a game that you can play using the Oculus Rift, which is owned by Facebook now, but you can get an Oculus Rift and you can play this new game called Until You Fall. Sounds just like, you know, the gameplay is just like it sounds. You play until you fall. And when you fall, so it's a lot like those games where at Dave & Buster's, where you're running and you have to jump and you just do a simple thing. You just push a button and then you sidestep and then maybe sidestep again and you jump and jump, do things like that. I love the Spider-Man one, by the way. So if you ever get the chance to go to Dave & Buster's, go play the Spider-Man one. But this game is a lot like that in the sense that you're constantly making your way through this game, making choices to keep yourself alive and keep yourself going. And as you get further, things get a little bit more difficult, but you have to make the choice of, do you spend more of your points earned on life-saving things or on weaponry and upgrading your strength? It's a really genius game. And the great thing about it is things aren't just happening in front of you. Things are happening behind you as well. So you're forced to spin around 360 where you are and use your two wand controllers to fight. And it's really cool how they utilize a small blade like a dagger and then a long sword. and you have to use them both simultaneously to defeat the monsters that are in front of you. Most of them, the ones that I saw, were zombie-like characters or skeletons, and eventually you end up fighting a necromancer of sorts. But anyways, Shell Games is from Pittsburgh, which is where I'm from, and I actually had a couple friends that went to Shell Games and had been working there for quite a while. So when I got to meet up with these guys here at DreamHack 2020, they knew who I was talking about. They knew the friends that I knew, and it was just a really good time. So I highly recommend checking them out. Check out Shell Games, S-C-H-E-L-L Games. They're out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And in fact, they used to be on Carson Street. Now they are in Station Square. So if you know Pittsburgh at all and you know Station Square, you'll know that that's a pretty cool place to have an office. So that's that. DreamHack was phenomenal. If you get a chance to go sometime, definitely go. The next one, I believe, is at Dallas, and it's not too far from now. I think it's like a week or two away. So check that out and tell me what you think. If you go, shoot me a message. Let me know what you did. I would love to know how you actually get involved in playing a game, because that's what I didn't do and that's what I should have done. Anyways, moving on to stuff that's a little bit more automotive-based, because that's typically what I do. Now, so far right now, there isn't too much going on in the automotive sector. But I did want to talk about one thing, and that's I gotta find it. Oh, here it is. Now, this is a sore subject for some people because it just wasn't a popular vehicle in the sense that the people who really, really liked cars hated this car, but the people who just needed a car loved this car. And I for one, actually really love it, and I'll tell you why. But first and foremost, let's talk about the Chrysler PT Cruiser. Now, the Chrysler PT Cruiser came out as a concept, and actually not just one concept car, but a couple. It took key elements from the Chrysler Pronto concept, as well as the Chrysler GT Cruiser, which was essentially what exactly the PT Cruiser turned out to be. There was even a Chrysler GT Bruiser, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't know how far along that got, actually. Why don't we look that up? Chrysler GT Bruiser. Okay, so this may have just been a die-cast model or something. I don't actually see anything for it, but when you look up the PT Cruiser, a lot of people think that PT stood for personal transport. Now, I can't remember exactly what it stood for, but that makes sense. It was sort of like a cargo van, but a little bit shorter. It didn't have the big boxiness of it. And a lot of people attribute it to a hearse. They think it looks very hearse-like, and they're not necessarily wrong. It also resembles Al Capone's classic car that he would have used back in the 40s and 50s, or before that, 30s. I don't remember when Al Capone was alive. All I know is I wasn't alive when he was. Why don't we just look and see when he was alive? Al Capone was alive in, he was born at the turn of the century in 1899. And he died in 1947. So he was in the 40s, 30s and 40s. Everybody knows that he was a mafia guy, a mobster, and very well known. But one of the things that he was also known for was his choice of cars. And one of his cars was a Cadillac. It's a 1928 Cadillac. It was bulletproof for the time. I don't know how well it would stand up to bullets now, but given that most of the cars back then were made out of very, very thick steel, I'd imagine it actually held up pretty well. But it was a 1928 Cadillac 341A Town Sedan. We should talk about these cars because the definition of a sedan back then is very much different from a definition of what a sedan is now. I look at Al Capone's car and I think more of something like a Range Rover. It's big and it looks more like a truck. Now we think of sedan as this, you know, short, low to the ground, possibly wide, possibly long, four-door vehicle with very little height. You know, this is a big vehicle. But It was badass, nevertheless. It was a very badass looking car. But anyways, the Chrysler PT Cruiser resembled that a little bit. It had the big bulgy fender flares, but they were everything was inclusive to the vehicle. Everything was attached to the vehicle and pretty seamless. Whereas in Al Capone's car, the fenders were kind of bolt on and, you know, everything looked pieced together in a very tasteful way, mind you. The Cadillacs back then were, in my opinion, way prettier than they are today in most cases. But I digress. The PT Cruiser was not loved by a lot of people. However, it was loved by enough people that Chrysler continued to produce what they called the Dream Cruiser series. And almost every year, every other year, they would come out with a new Dream Cruiser edition. And they went from Series 1 all the way up to maybe 6 or 7. They had quite a few. And it was a lot like Scion with the release series. So what they would do is they would put on a special paint color, possibly different wheels, maybe update the interior. They had a woody edition. They had a wooden panel side edition. They even had additions. These weren't the Dream Cruiser ones, but they had ones that you could get a custom paint job to resemble your favorite sport team. So I remember seeing a lot of Ohio State Buckeye ones because I used to live in Ohio. But the Dream Cruiser Series 1 was probably one of my favorite because it came in this gold that was just gorgeous. It was called Inca Gold, and it's very similar to Fortuna's Gold, which is out now on the Challenger 50th Anniversary Edition. It's a very pretty color. It was probably a pretty expensive color to put on the vehicle. And the nice thing about that color was it actually blended into the interior as well. Now, the PT Cruiser generally had color-matched components up on the dash. It had the two winglets. The one that was the gauge cluster, and then the other one that was just the passenger airbag area. But those were usually color keyed to whatever the exterior of the car was. Then there were door panels that also had a similar color. But in the Dream Cruiser, they would throw in that same color on the outside onto the seats. That's pretty awesome when you think about how hard it is to color match things, let alone color match leather or a leatherette. So I give them credit for that. Chrysler always kept people on their toes when it came to their Dream Cruiser series. And they kept getting better once the SRT4 Neon came out because they took that turbocharged engine, which, mind you, had 230, 240 horsepower, threw it into the PT Cruiser, which sorely needed it, if you ask me. And it became a much more fun car. It became a bit of an enthusiast car. So I have respect for the PT Cruiser mostly because of how unique and how weird it was. It was kind of like the Mini Cooper for Chrysler, but they only had one variant. There was no two, other than with the exception of the convertible version, there was only one. There wasn't like Mini Cooper has the Countryman, the Clubman, the Speedster one, and a couple other ones that they've had over the years, the Paceman. But the PT Cruiser could have. If Chrysler didn't just give up on it like they did, yeah. Well, actually, it wasn't even Chrysler; it was Daimler and Fiat. If they didn't divest in this vehicle, I think we would see a lot more variants of this. And it's probably a vehicle that would make sense right now because people like SUVs, they like crossovers, they like compact crossovers, and the PT Cruiser offered everything that people want in a vehicle. They might just not like the look of it from an aesthetic standpoint, and that's fine. Those are things that can be changed. I just wish the PT Cruiser would have been given its due and justice to really bring it into this time period, because it wouldn't have taken much. You could have lifted the vehicle, put on some plastic fender flares to make it look like it's off-road worthy. I mean, shit, GM did it with the Sonic and the what's the other one? The Spark. Toyota's done it with the, what is that? The Prius C and the Yaris. And now they're going to do it again with a lifted Yaris to make it a crossover for the European market. So PT Cruiser could have been something that really stuck with the market. It sold a lot. It was very popular. And that's why they kept doing the Dream Cruiser series. So I also love the fact that the Dream Cruiser name just tied in with the Detroit Dream Cruise. You know, it's a little bit of heritage. So if you were lucky enough to own one of these Chrysler GT cruisers or the PT Cruiser Dream Series editions. Ah, man, you were lucky because they had some really cool ones. One of my other favorite ones was the Route 66 edition, which was yellow, had a big spoiler, had a lot of chrome. It had the 2.4 liter turbocharged engine, and it scooted. They were a little bit heavy of a vehicle. They didn't get the best of gas mileage, but they did come in a stick shift. And you know me, I love stick shifts. Oh, we have some other people who have just tuned in. Ahmad, how are you, man? How are you? Good to see you. Sharon, I think you're still there. I don't know. But we are going to move on. Like I said, there's not a lot going on in the automotive industry yet. However, I did want to talk about the Jeep Gladiator Mojave. Have you guys seen that thing? It's awesome. And I don't know if you've tuned in previous episodes, but I've talked about it before a little bit. I had to keep it hush-hush for a while. It's been 8 months since I've started working on the shocks for that vehicle, but it is out now. It is there. Cat's out of the bag, and I can talk about it all day long. If you were wondering, I don't know the price, and that sucks because I really, really want one. Particularly because it's one of the few special edition Wranglers Gladiators that's been out, or Wrangler, that you can get in a stick shift. The Moab edition of the Wrangler, you cannot get in a stick shift. And I think there's a couple other ones that you can only get in the 8-speed automatic. And now, while that's not a bad transmission, it's just not my favorite. But Jeep is kind of doing what the PT Cruiser did, and that's offering a lot of different special editions. Now, they're not in a series per se, but they do keep the people up on their toes, and they keep bringing out new buzz models, as they call them. So the Mojave, although it's not just a buzz, it's definitely a shock. It's one of those models that is going to drive a lot of attention towards the Gladiator. And unfortunately, the Gladiator sales haven't been great. They're not lackluster, but they're not great. They're not what the Wrangler is. And I think that's unfortunate because when you think about what you're getting with that vehicle, as compared to, say, a Toyota Tacoma or a Ford Ranger or a Chevy Colorado, a GMC Canyon, you're getting, first and foremost, a convertible truck. Nobody else can say that they have a convertible truck in the world that I can think of. Maybe some old Land Rovers, but those are the Defenders and those are the old ones. And Land Rover does not have a Defender truck out, and their Defenders don't have a removable roof. So there's not many things out there that can claim to be a convertible SUV like the Wrangler, let alone a convertible truck. Now, the Bronco is coming out. It's going to be making its way out here in March. And while I'm actually kind of excited about it, I don't think it's going to steal a lot of sales away from the Wrangler or the Gladiator for that matter. First of all, there's not going to be a Bronco truck. That's what the Ranger is. Second of all, Ford has to really come up with a lot of tricks to best the Wrangler. And that would include removable doors, a removable roof, a cloth soft top, a hard top, a fold-down windshield, which I definitely know it does not have. And just it needs to have that kind of open-air experience that the Wrangler has been offering forever since the 1941 Willys models. And that's a tough thing to break. So we'll see if they can do it. I hope they do. But, you know, Wrangler for life, I guess, right? So I'm excited to finally actually get to drive a Mojave. And as soon as I do, I will tell you guys all about it. We're coming up on 25 minutes here, so I don't want to keep this too long. I'm going to go on a little bit of a break. I will be right back. All right, we are back here at Sketchbook Audio. Thanks for tuning in to all my viewers who are watching on the Instagram Live, Sketchbook Audio. Thank you. I have the ability to stream in different ways. So not only am I streaming from this podcast, but I'm also doing it live on Instagram. Now, if I had another phone, I'd probably stream live on YouTube or Twitter as well. So if you need to follow me, if you want to follow me, if you just want to drop me a message that says you suck, you're an asshole, go away, stop recording. I don't care what you put. Just the fact of the matter is you're giving me attention, and I'm an attention whore. So you can follow me on Twitter, Sketchbook Audio, or you can email me at ryan.sketchbook.audio@gmail.com, or you can follow us on sketchbook_audio for Instagram. I'm sure I'll come up with some other ways too, but you can also do it on YouTube. Just look up Ryan Sketch, and I have a couple episodes up there as well. Unfortunately, I can't pick from, you know, different streaming services at the same time. I just have this and I have Anchor. So anyways, while we were gone, I was talking about things that I would like to bring attention to. And one of those things is the 1975, first and foremost. They are freaking awesome. So if you haven't listened to the 1975 yet, you need to. But the PSA-FCA, merger. First of all, what name are they going to finally land on? That's what I really want to know, because PSA and FCA are very similar. Three letters, both ending in an A, and, you know, they technically mean the same thing. So, well, you know, PSA is their group, and then there's FCA. So, you know, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles. I'm curious as to what name they'll finally land on. I hope it's something good, something original. I don't want these little letters. I actually wish they would just go back to using Chrysler, you know? I know Chrysler doesn't own PSA, and PSA doesn't own FCA. It's a partnership. It's 50-50, but I would like to see them, if they're going to be more than just a partnership, let's just call it a cool name. Call it Legendary Automotive. I don't freaking care. Just something different than PSA/FCA. That would be silly. Here's one of the reasons why you probably won't see much of a change, is because FCA spent tons of money rebranding everything with an FCA logo, and then they reincorporated the Pentastar, which is, you know, it's like the penthouse or the pentagram. The Pentagon and the pentagram, coincidentally. The Pentagon, when you look at it from the top, that also happens to be the original logo for Chrysler. So, and it incorporated Dodge and Ram and all that stuff in it as well as Jeep. I don't remember when that kind of came out, but my guess is probably somewhere around the 70s or 80s, maybe Lee Iacocca time. Who knows? But anyways, I would like to see what that brand finally becomes. And furthermore, I would like to see what kind of cars they're going to produce, because between the two brands, they have phenomenal cars to pull from and tie together or build off of, whatever, platform sharing, what have you. They could do so many different things. Peugeot has a lot of really good small cars. I think it's Peugeot Citroën, and they have a bunch, DS. They have so many different brands. It's ridiculous. And then FCA, of course, has a lot of different brands too. You got Fiat, you got Chrysler, you got Dodge, you got Ram. You have Alfa Romeo, Maserati. Ferrari no longer is under that banner, but there is still a family that owns, from the Fiat family, still owns a portion of Ferrari. I don't know if it's a majority share, but whatever. So there's so many different, you probably won't see a Ram pull too much design inspiration from a Peugeot or anything. First of all, it's huge. Peugeot doesn't have any vehicles that are that big. However, what you could see is, do you remember the Chrysler 100C? They were going to make this, and it was going to be a hatchback a la the PT Cruiser, but be a little bit more Chrysler and what Chrysler is now. Once they came out with that 200 concept and then turned it into the actual 200 that we got, that unfortunately only lasted for about 2 years, 3 years maybe. So they could do something like that. They could turn some of the Jeeps more electric quickly. They could get a lot more smaller Jeeps for different markets if they wanted to. I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a lot more smaller Jeeps going to different markets. And I think one of the things just water dripping off this cup. I thought I dropped it on my, you know, lower area, and luckily I didn't. This is such a good song too. Hard Out. I have no idea what it means, but whatever. There's one vehicle I would really love to see FCA pull from, because it's very harmonious with Dodge muscle, and that's the E-Legend. if they took a Charger and wanted to really bring back, like, say, the 1969 Charger RT, but bring it into the modern age with a lot of technology, but still keep that muscle, that bulge in the shoulders, they would do it with the E-Legend. It's the perfect car. The only problem with the E-Legend was it was kind of small. So it's muscle for the Europeans and maybe even for the Japanese. It's too small for the muscle here in America because we had massive boat-like cars. But when we go towards electric cars and full autonomy, there's no reason we can't go back to those. We just use lighter materials, or we're on electricity now. So we just come up with a way to utilize all of that space for batteries and for more efficient transmissions and whatnot. But it's one vehicle I would love to see turned into a muscle car, a modern muscle car. But they have so many other vehicles that we could start combining and homogenizing, and I would love to see what that looks like. So if you have any ideas of what cars they should combine, that would be great. I would love to hear about that. One of the brands, unfortunately, that's not doing so great is the Chrysler name itself. They have two vehicles. They have the 300, which is not long for this world, and they have the Pacifica. I'm not going to count the Voyager because, in fact, it is the exact same vehicle as the Pacifica. It just is going to keep its original face while the Pacifica is going to get a totally new refresh, which, by the way, I love. I probably will never own a minivan, but if I were forced to own a minivan, it would be the Pacifica, and it would be the Pacifica Pinnacle. Let me tell you why. The Pacifica Pinnacle comes with really nice pillows strapped to the backs of, or well, to the backrest of the middle row seats. I would just spend all my time there. I would drop my kids off at soccer practice and I would just go in the back seat and I would sit there. And they have TV screens in the back of the headrest that are like this freaking big. And they're touchscreen, so I could just sit there and play games or watch sports or do whatever, play video games. There's HDMI ports. I could sit there and just live life while my kids play sports or go to ballet practice or go to things that I don't really need to watch or I may not even be allowed to watch. I really wish they would do simple things like that in other vehicles. Pillows on the seats. It's comfortable. It's great. I don't need just lumbar support. I need a freaking pillow with the vehicle's name or logo on it. That just, man. Pinnacle is a great name too. I wish they would have used, the Dodge Durango Citadel for a Chrysler vehicle instead of, they were going to actually, from what I hear, is that the Citadel name was actually going to be a FCA, another SUV for Chrysler. And it could have been basically a twin of the Durango like they used to do, which was the Durango and the Aspen. Didn't work out so well, but that's neither here nor there. They could have done it and then just called it something else and called it the Citadel. But instead, what they decided to do was take Citadel and use that as the top tier level for the Durango. Not a bad way to go. I mean, Citadels are big, strong, sturdy, but a little bit more elegant than a Durango actually is. A Durango is in your face muscle. It's massive. It's not as big as a Suburban or a Tahoe or an Escalade. It's actually kind of diminutive compared to those vehicles, but it's still big, and it's big for a Dodge. It's the biggest vehicle that FCA makes aside from the Ram. Now, once, if they ever do, I'm assuming they're going to at some point, if they ever decide to put the, because the Grand Wagoneer will be built on the Ram DT platform. So they could bring out a Durango that's built on a truck platform as well. And it could be the DS platform, the previous generation Ram, that's actually still running alongside the DT. It's really weird how they do that. I don't know why they did that, but they're making money off of it. So there you go. There's your reason, money. I would like to see more vehicles brought into the Chrysler stable because Jeep's getting a lot of attention. Ram is going to be getting, hopefully, I hear and I see, camouflage models, but getting a smaller Dakota, perhaps. I would love to see a Dakota, especially if it's a stick shift. I think they could build it alongside the Gladiator or in a similar plant to like the Ram now, the Ram 1500, or they could even build it in Mexico, but they could give it a stick shift. Come on. The original Dakota had stick shifts all the way up until the last like 3 years of it. And those are better days. I pine for a stick shift truck. I really do. And that's why I love the Mojave so much, because it's a badass looking truck, and it's a stick shift, and it's a convertible, and it's the right size truck bed. And speaking of right size truck beds, a lot of people disagree with me. It's a 5 foot bed, which is pretty small. There's no other option. There is only the 4-door cabin and the 5 foot truck bed. You can't make it smaller. You can't make it longer. You can't make it wider. I mean, I'm sure you could probably find a way to take the truck bed off and then just put a flatbed there, a stake bed, if you will. But why would you want to? I don't know. But everybody else is getting attention except for Chrysler. And I think that's a real shame. In fact, my wife brought up to me today that she was looking at a Chrysler 300 and she was looking at a used 300S and a 300C. And she asked me, babe, when's the next 300 coming out? Because I really want to see what that looks like. And I just looked at her like, oh, what next one? I don't think there is one. It would be really awesome if there was one, because it's not many cars have sold quite like a 300, let alone have held on with like talons just dragging on people, because they haven't changed anything. It still looks the same. The only thing that they've done more is they've thrown out a couple new colors to it. Frostbite, by the way, which is very similar to this blue. That's a sexy color. But they gave you the SRT's overall body kit, but no performance to back it, other than that you could get the 5.7 if you wanted, or the 3.6, which gives you 300 horsepower. Not too bad. They just haven't done anything to it. Now, it is a timeless design, but the interior is aging and not very well. I was comparing an Audi A4 from like 2014 or 15 to a 2017-18 Audi A4 when they changed the interior pretty dramatically. And in those same years, FCA has still been making the same damn 300, and they haven't changed anything about it. They changed the taillights, they changed the headlights a little bit, and the deck lid, I think, changed. They incorporated a spoiler into the back. It's not enough, though. Chrysler, you need to have more vehicles, and Peugeot, I think, could give you those vehicles, whether they're from Peugeot, Citroën, or any of their other brands that they own, like TS. DS would give you some really good vehicles to put, rebrand a 300 on. Now, the one problem that any automaker incurs when they're trying to, we'll say, badge engineer a vehicle from Europe or from other countries to bring it to the United States is emissions, number one. We all know what happens when you put diesel engines in cars and bring them over to the United States and change the programming. You get sued, and you cause all these environmental fanatics like myself to get pissed off and, you know, rally against you. But you also have the safety standards that is really hard. iCar Imports. Hi, thanks for tuning in. We're talking about Chrysler and the vehicles that it needs to bring life back into the company. Because in just a year, maybe less, there's only going to be the Pacifica. And until they start showing us more product, that's all there's going to be. And that could be a company or a brand that gets absorbed elsewhere. And I really don't want to see that. Look what Lancia happened. What happened to Lancia? Lancia is one car. That is a fabled car company. It is a legendary car company. Think about the Lancia Stratos and a bunch of other vehicles that they've had over the years that are just gorgeous vehicles. And now they have one vehicle. It's like the Lancia Delta or something like that. I forget what it's called. But actually, Chrysler products used to sell in Europe as Lancias. They don't anymore. They are just the Chrysler Voyager and the Chrysler 300. So it's just a shame because Chrysler is the name that's in the FCA and they're divesting in it. They're getting rid of product and not putting anything into it. I'm sure they will eventually, but we would like to see something, a glimmer of hope that says, oh no, dude, hold on. We love this company as much as you do. We're going to put product back into it. Just give us a second. In the meantime, they're just throwing money at Ram and Jeep. And then also just putting bigger engines into other cars that don't necessarily need it. Like the Durango has an SRT 8, which is the 5.7 liter. No, I'm sorry, that's the RT, the 5.7 liter. Then you got the SRT 8, which has the 6.4 liter. And I'm pretty sure the 6.2 liter supercharged one is coming out, which is the Hellcat engine. I'm pretty sure that's happening. Maybe it's 6.1. I forget what's in those cars. Like I said, that's not what Sketchbook Audio is about. They're just talking about, we're talking about the design. And that's one thing that kind of gets me. You throw in all this horsepower and the only thing you do is change the hood. I'm looking at you, Challenger Demon. That's really all they changed. They changed the grill, the upper grill a little bit. They gave it like this, you know, weird shape that now most SRT products have, but I'd like to see more. If you're going to throw that much horsepower into the car and then jack up the price, get this. You can buy a Durango RT for like $40,000. But if you're going to try and go for whatever this new one is, a Hellcat Durango, it's going to be like $80,000-something. So you're paying $40,000 for a bigger engine and most likely a supercharger. That works fine for supercars, like a Lamborghini when you go, or an Audi R8 when you're going from a V8 to a V10. But it's a Durango. In the end, it is still a Durango. Not that it's a bad car by any means. It's just that they haven't done anything to the design of it. Now, let me take a step back real quick because they are, in fact, changing the design a little bit. From what I have seen in camouflage photos, it's going to get a new lower fascia. We've already seen the bumper. It's already been put online. So it definitely is getting a new lower fascia. Probably going to get a new upper fascia, the grill. And it's going to integrate more into the headlights. So it'll get new headlights as well. Probably a new hood. It all depends on if the dimensions and everything didn't change much. And if they do a wide body to it, then they probably have to give it new fenders, new hood, and you know, hopefully a new rear end in some regards. But that's what I would expect to see. If you're going to throw that much horsepower and performance into a vehicle, change up the exterior a little bit too. Do what BMW does or somebody else that's making a high performance trim and a lower performance trim, and they differentiate them. Looking at the Charger and even the Challenger, there's not much differentiating the lower trim models from the upper trim models, especially when now the GT gets the RT's hood, that hood scoop that's kind of like the Viper. And you could get the Hellcat hood on pretty much anything. All you got to do is go to the shop and order it, and it comes matte black, so that's pretty sweet. I'd like to see FCA have new product, and it doesn't necessarily have to be all new. It doesn't have to be revolutionary. It just needs to be evolutionary. And since they're making so much money off of these vehicles, particularly the Wranglers, the Rams, the Grand Cherokees, start putting some of that money back into the vehicles, not just the performance of them. Because ultimately, in the end, we're going to have to scale back on a lot of this high performance. From an ICE standpoint, meaning internal combustion engine, we're going to have to pull back from that and start putting in electrification. Supposedly, the Durango is getting some sort of mild hybrid system akin to the Wrangler's partial hybrid and the Ram's partial hybrid, which should help boost fuel economy. But maybe they put an electric motor on the front or the rear wheels and you don't have a transaxle. You just have an electronic connection between, you know, the two at front and rear axle, like the Pacifica all-wheel drive system has. I don't know how they're going to do it. I really, personally, I think the Pacifica all-wheel drive system is magic, is wizardry. I don't think it's real. I think it's just somebody waved a wand and made the impossible possible. Because the Pacifica wasn't necessarily built with all-wheel drive in mind. What it was built with in mind was just safety and making sure that it didn't get rid of the stow-and-go seats in the front or in the middle row and in the back row. Every minivan has stow-and-go in the back, but not in the middle row. That was something that was specific to FCA. Now, the reason they didn't have all-wheel drive systems for a while when the Pacifica first started was because they couldn't figure out how to, you know, integrate the stow-and-go in the middle row with the all-wheel drive system. You have this big, bulky transaxle connecting the front wheels and the rear wheels, and it wouldn't fit in the packaging with the stow-and-go system set. But somehow they figured it out. I don't know how. It didn't really change much underneath. They just did it. Like, poof, all-wheel drive. You get all-wheel drive. You get all-wheel drive. You get all-wheel drive. We all get all-wheel drives. I feel like GoPro over here. Anyways, that's my spiel for that. I've been bouncing around a lot. Sorry, my mind's going in a bunch of different places. I want to end this episode with your guys' thoughts on EVs. This year is going to be a huge year for EVs. It's already turning out to be a huge year for EVs in other countries, but here in the United States, we're going to get things like the Rivian R1S and the R1T. They're finally coming. Amazon has their Rivian trucks already started and already built a few, I think. And that'll be coming out real soon. Ford has the Mustang Mach-E, or if they're just dropping the Mustang name, period, for marketing purposes, and to appease most people who really abhor the idea of using the Mustang name on a crossover, then they'll just call it the Mach-E. But they have that. Audi has the e-tron GT, the sedan version of it. Which I don't even know what that's called. It's e-tron something or another. Volkswagen's coming out with just a bombardment of electric cars, mostly because of the diesel gate, but good for them. You know, they're turning it around. They're trying to put their best foot forward and make up for their mistake. My only concern is that a lot of these vehicles are going to be very expensive. The Bolt, for example, is like a $30-some-thousand car. The Fiat 500e was a $35,000 car. And yes, you got the tax rebates, but if you know how that tax incentives works, if you lease the car, you get that $7,500. If you buy the car outright, and by the way, that $7,500 isn't cash to you. That's something that you can deduct from your taxes, which is why it's a great idea to buy that vehicle like in December, right before, you know, your next year's tax things come out. You don't want to buy it at the beginning of the year. Let's put it that way. But if you buy the car, you get like $3,500 cash off, which is good. It's still something, but it's not the full $7,500. People really bank on that. You know, hey, you're going to get this tax credit of $7,500. That's great if you're making a lot of money where you can deduct all of that. You see what I'm saying? So I just hope that all these vehicles don't end up costing an arm and a leg. And Volkswagen having so many vehicles coming out, there's a good chance. Now, they've promised that they won't, but there's a good chance that they're still going to be a little spendy. Now, the Tesla Model Y is on its way out here as well. But the Model 3, if you look at it, it can get pretty pricey. That $35,000 mark is hard to get to. You have to get a rear-wheel drive and you get the bigger battery, so you have like a longer range. You don't get the bigger battery. You get the smaller battery with not as long of a range. So who knows? We'll see. Instagram is telling me I have 14 seconds left, so I'm going to be signing off at Instagram here shortly. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. I appreciate that. You can follow me on anchor.fm. Just look up Sketchbook Audio or any other podcast outlet. Thanks. Okay, so that's my Instagram has just ended, and that's fine. We're going to continue here. But so, yeah, we have all these hybrids and electric cars coming out. Even Jeep has a bunch of hybrids coming out, and they want to electrify their entire lineup by 2022, which is phenomenal. I think that's a great idea, especially since Jeeps aren't necessarily known for being very fuel efficient. In fact, my mom has a Jeep Compass that she just bought. It's brand new. It's a 2020 model. It's got every freaking option. And the window sticker says you can easily get like 32 miles per gallon, or maybe it's 30. I forget what it is. And hers is all-wheel drive. But on that city, she's getting like 21, 22, and it's not a big vehicle. My Toyota RAV4 is a much bigger vehicle, and I get 32 miles per gallon highway consistently. And I can even get closer to 40 miles per gallon because I have a lot of hills around here where I'm going mostly downhill. Hell, I've actually seen 50 miles per gallon just going downhill from one of these big mountains that I've been at recently. But that's, you know, that's cheating the system. It's hypermiling, so to speak. But what else is coming out? The Polestar 2 is on its way out. The Volvo XC40 is on its way out. Rivian, like I said, is on its way out. Tesla has the Model Y. Also, unfortunately, the Cybertruck. We could talk about that in a later episode because I really want to discuss the design of that because it irks me in certain ways that are not appropriate to talk about on this podcast. But there's so many vehicles coming out that are electrified, and I'm really excited for that. It's just the cost. And if we're talking about a bunch of vehicles that are going to be in the $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 range, it's almost pointless to talk about them, period, because most of us can't afford that. There are a lot of good reasons to have an electric car, but if you can't afford it, what's the point of talking about it? Now, you can go and buy a lot of these vehicles used at phenomenal prices. I like that word today. Phenomenal is my word today. At amazing prices. You can get a Fiat 500e, which I know is not everybody's cup of tea, but it's a good car, or the BMW i3 if you prefer something a little bit more luxurious and spacious. You can get these cars for like 15 grand. I've even seen Fiat 500es for 5 grand with 20,000 miles on them, and they're only 2-3 years old, coming fresh off of a lease. And by the way, you could only get them in California and Oregon, but now you can ship them across the entire United States and problem solved. So it's just bringing the technology to the masses at a price that everybody can stomach. And the Ford Mustang Mach-E is not a bad price by any means. It's not a set in stone price, but it's a good idea of what you're going to be paying for that vehicle. The GT is all the way up by about $60,000. And then that limited first run edition was like 55, maybe 60. But again, you get that $7,500 tax break, and you also can, you know, get the $3,500 or whatever it is if you actually purchase the car versus leasing the car. And the lowest model is probably going to run you around $35,000 with that tax incentive. So it's getting close. And that one makes more sense because it is a bigger vehicle. You have a lot of space. It's very practical. Unlike the Bolt and the 500e, which you can't put much in them or on top of them. So That's what we got for today for this episode. I am running down the clock right now. So thank you for tuning in. I wanted to talk about inspiration and what that does for me in art. But what I'll tell you right now is it's not just looking at an object or something and saying that's inspiring me and that's exactly what you're going to draw. It's about pulling out elements of what that item is or what you can do for that. I look at a beach that's covered in debris and garbage, and I'm inspired to do something like the Fisker Ocean. I want to make something that's efficient, that's not harming the environment, so on and so forth. So it's about the story too, not just the item itself. Anyways, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate it. Without you guys, this isn't going to go on. So thank you for tuning in, and be good to one another, and keep drawing. Till next time.